This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
The Jeep Grand Cherokee 4xe plug-in hybrid is built for the best of both worlds. For the city buzz, for the call of the wild, for finding solitude, for sharing memories, for day trips, and for far-roaming adventures. Because with gas and electric capability, the Jeep Grand Cherokee 4xe inspires you to explore more, to explore it all. Tap the banner to learn more. Jeep is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's one of the most iconic sports in the Paralympics. Great Britain has competed in the men's event every year since the first tournament in 1960. But a gold medal has been elusive. Could a short trip across the Channel to Paris change all that next year? I'm John.
And I'm Michael. And as well as being a Paralympic sport, wheelchair basketball is also very inclusive because it allows everyone to compete together. But what does the future have in store? Let's find out. This is Great British Bosses from Anything But Footy, the behind-the-scenes conversation of British sport with the men and the women who run it.
Hi, I'm Justine Baines. I'm the CEO of British Wheelchair Basketball.
Justine, congratulations. A year ago, you took the job. How's it going?
I'd probably describe it as the most bonkers year of my life. I haven't really paused for breath. I think from the minute I joined to coming up to an anniversary of a year, it's just been a whirlwind, but in the best possible way. It's a brilliant sport. It's run by some fantastic people. The people that play it are awesome. And I never thought I could get this excited about a sport that I'm spectacularly awful about at as well.
We mentioned the sport. It's so historical within the Paralympics. It's probably one of those sports that you go, oh, yeah, I know exactly what that is to anyone in the world.
Well, I don't know. I didn't really know anything about it. And one of my kind of personal reasons for taking the job was that one of my daughters had an illness called complex regional pain syndrome, CRPS, and was a wheelchair user for the best part of a year. Didn't know this sport existed. And if I'd known that we could go as a family and all have played it together, that might have been something that we would have changed how we felt at the time. Because when you suddenly go from not being a wheelchair user to being a wheelchair user or having someone in your family that does, the world is shut off to you. It literally changes. You can't get up curbs. You can't get into places that you're used to going into. So to have that environment where you can go as a family and all play together, all do something active and, you know, be in a community of people that get it, that would have been amazing. So one of my reasons for being here is to make more people know about it.
So is that the challenge for you? The first challenge, if you like, in the job is to raise awareness to get more participation?
Yeah, definitely. Somebody asked me not long ago, do I think that performance, so the Paralympic side of the sport and the grassroots side should be in the same governing body or should they be split up? I don't think you can split them. I think you need the elite level so people can see what's going on. You can reach bigger audiences. You can use that platform to get more people playing the sport. But you need more people playing the sport so that you get a bigger pipeline of players, coaches, officials, people that want to run the clubs coming through the sport, so that you've got a better pool of players. Ultimately, you can win more world medals if you've got a better pool of players to pick from.
And do you see an upturn in inquiries, if you like, after success at elite level?
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, I wasn't here for Tokyo, but I think every sport does. There's a massive uplift in just people being aware of your sport after major games. And the thing is with Paralympic sport, certainly in our sport, there's not that many opportunities to do that. We don't have the reach of, you know, rugby for a World Cup or football for a World Cup. We don't have that. So the Paralympics is our massive pinnacle for getting in front of people.
And as you say, it's a Paralympic sport, but as you also say, you can play together. So it's an incredibly inclusive sport for non-disabled and disabled.
Yeah. And I think that's what makes us special, because you can play in our leagues as an able-bodied person and be worse than somebody that's got a disability. And that's what I see at school level, at that introductory level. Like, I watch kids playing that aren't necessarily good at sport, but you put them in a chair, so they're not good at the rugby, the hockey, the netball and all the football and all that kind of thing. But you put them in a chair and they're brilliant. And so it gives opportunity for particularly young people, kids and young people, to do something that their peers can't do. So from an able-bodied perspective, it can actually give opportunities to kids that might otherwise struggle. That doesn't mean that we should make it a sport that is taken over by able-bodied people. And that's something I get challenged on a lot. You can't play in the Paralympics as an able-bodied person, full stop. So it's always going to be a sport that is predominantly played by people with some sort of impairment. But I think it just enables, at grassroots level, people to understand more and people to get more involved. Quite a few players play with their families. One of our board members has got two sons who both played in our national leagues. One of his sons had a disability, the other didn't, but it's something they could do together. And I hear that a lot.
And as you said, you're in charge from the grassroots, and there's a huge domestic league as part of that, all the way up to elite level and competing at the Paralympics.
Yeah, and one of my ambitions is that we don't have to have our male players going abroad to play. So most of our GB men play in Europe, mainly Spain, Italy, Germany, because they can get paid to do that. We don't pay our professional play, our top league players, our Premier League players, and that's a real shame. And part of that is because we don't have the platform through which to do that. So I'd love it if we could have fully professional leagues in this country where our men and women get to play. We do have a Women's Premier League, which was launched, about to start the third season. That was launching in the pandemic because my predecessor recognised that it's a mixed game domestically. So men and women play on the same court and you get an extra point if you field a woman. But the role of the female players on court tend to not be shooting and not majorly defensive because of their size and strength. So the role they play in a mixed team is very different to how they need to play in that Paralympic team, which is all women. So we've done a lot of work over the last couple of years to give women the chance to play at that higher level. And it showed with the silver medal of our Europeans earlier this year.
So what is the pyramid for your sport? Someone listening to this who maybe wants to go and try it, where in football you go and play Sunday morning football, there's an obvious pyramid there to the Premier League, for example. What is it in your sport?
We've got clubs playing a league, if you want to play the league, and if you want to play through a club, there's a league there, so it's goes from Premier League downwards, and it's varying standards. We've also this year just launched what we call Inspire League. So we've got an initiative that's called Inspire Regeneration. That's designed to get people into the sport. So you can come, you can sign up. If you want to run your own sport, your own club or team in wheelchair basketball, you can get a grant to enable you to come and be a first stage coach. You can get grants to get wheelchairs. So we literally will help you get started. And what we've done now is we discovered that there's quite a lot of players that don't want to play competitively necessarily. They don't want to play in that professional or that domestic league, but they do want to play regularly week in, week out. So we've now got this Inspire League system where you play a competitive game, but it's not in a league that counts. So there's no winning. You win and you lose the game, but there's no relegation. There's no league tables for it. You just can play regularly. So that's your entry point, right up to if you're 16 to 19, we've got DICE, the same as other sports, so Diploma in Sporting Excellence. We've got Pathway Camp, so our players coming through that are highlighted as having potential, they go onto the pathway and ultimately end up in that, hopefully, that GB squad. We just need more people playing the sport.
So we've already established you've got quite a wide remit. So what is the size and scope of your organization? Are you in a skyscraper in London with thousands of people over several floors, or something a little bit more manageable, shall we say?
I wish. And this is a misconception, but I think this is a misconception of most sports. You know, outside the top five, we have a small office in Loughborough, which we rent from Loughborough University, and that's about it. I've got 17 people that work for the organisation, mixture of full-time, part-time. We've got a full-time women's coach for our GB squad. We have part-time, well, contracted men's coaches because we don't have the setup, because most of the men play abroad. It's not like we can just get them in camps every month in the UK. So, no, I would love to have a skyscraper in London with endless people. And that's part of the problem, actually. We want to get more people aware of our sport, but I need manpower to do that. I need somebody going around. You know, we don't have a schools programme, which we're working on developing, but I don't have anybody to deliver that. So I've got to work with youth sport trusts and activity alliance type people to get that set up. And that's great, but we're competing against other sports there, so it's not the same. And one of my biggest beefs is the disparity of funding between Paralympic and Olympic sports. It's shocking. It's absolutely shocking.
And you will know that, Justine, from your role previously at British Triathlon.
Yeah.
So how do you go about changing that? How can you, as the new CEO of British Wheelchair Basketball, how can you help change that?
I think there's a few things. One thing is the infrastructure of sport in this country is a bit weird. I'm not a sports CEO. So a lot of sports have CEOs that have been, as you guys all know, from sport to sport to sport. It's really common. Most sports will want somebody that's been a CEO at another sport. And, you know, there's lots of pros to that. But the downside of that is you don't necessarily bring fresh eyes from outside the sector. I'm lucky, I think, in that I've come from a commercial background and I've come in and gone, well, this doesn't really make a lot of sense. Why are we doing this? And I think if you were to create the sports infrastructure in this country, you wouldn't do it as we've got it now. And I think probably that's true of most Exchequer-funded organisations. You know, the NHS, you wouldn't, if you're drawing that up from a blank sheet of paper, you definitely wouldn't do it like it is. So I think there's some historical problems, but I struggle to understand why, let's use hockey, because I know you had Nick on here a few weeks ago. You know, they get, 12 million, 40 million, whatever it is, they have the same number of medalists that we do. They have 24 thereabouts, don't quote me on the figures, but you know, roughly 24 medalists from each games, two medals, men's and women's. We have the same number of medalists, yet we get 4.5 million. How is that fair? Now, the argument could be that more people play hockey, but we're not about participation in UK sport, we're about performance. So obviously with Sport England fund participation, UK sport fund performance. So that argument doesn't hold any weight for me. So what is the reason? The only conclusion I can draw is that it's a historic, so I don't think it's the view of the current UK sport government governance structure. I know I spoke to Sally about this lots of times, and I know it's not something that she wants to continue, but that's got to be unpicked. But everything is difficult to unpick when you've got an infrastructure that's well established like this is. But I just find that really difficult that you're telling me that my 24 medalists are less valuable than hockey's 24 medalists.
I think it's a really interesting point that you make, because Hannah Cockcroft has said to us that she feels that since London 2012, the Paralympic movement in this country has slightly gone backwards, that it hasn't moved on. We always thought it was the groundbreaking moment, and I think it was at the time. But have we gone backwards?
I mean, I wasn't around then, so in the world of sport, so that would be hard for me to comment. I think that more people are aware of the Paralympics. I think more people would watch the Paralympics and perhaps pre-2012. Do I think investment is the same? No. I speak to people in the Paralympic world. Somebody I was talking to last week doesn't get anywhere near the funding as an individual athlete that her able-bodied compatriots get. It just doesn't happen. It's not fair. And I've said this to a number of people at UK Sports, if you took a little bit of money off the big sports, you know, take 50, 100,000 off them and give it to me, they wouldn't notice it. Put that in my pocket, I mean, mine as in the sports, that makes a massive difference. you know, and everybody's struggling. We're just in, as you probably know, we're in the process of doing our submissions for the LA Cycles funding from UK Sport. We know it's, you know, they're not expecting to get any increased investment when the time comes. So we're all having to work on standstill budgets, which essentially means a funding cut. And when you're the big sports that can go and attract a sponsor, and I know they're finding it harder to get sponsorship, but it's much harder for us because we don't have that asset exchange. We don't have that transactional asset that we can say, well, if you give us some money, you can speak to 4 million of our sport participants, because they don't exist. You know, we're on a much smaller scale. So, and I get the, we're a smaller sport, so we don't have the profile of something like hockey or triathlon or swimming or cycling, but we've got, we have just as big impact on the people that play our sport.
And you've led me there perfectly into my next question, because you've spoken very well and very passionately there about UK sport government lottery funding, but the challenge is about bringing commercial income in, and that is a step change, isn't it?
The way that UK Sport are doing funding now, it's much more collaborative. You know, I talk to people at UK Sport all the time, and I know my team do. So what we get this cycle, we know where we're going to be roughly. Yes, we've got to do the submission. Yes, we've got to apply for little pots of money here and there. But we've got a brilliant partner in Motability. They came on board with us earlier this year, and that's a great fit for us because, you know, they've got a reach to people that use, you know, need support in terms of cars, and they're a really strong partner for us. But there's not that many Motabilities around, so we're now competing with the big boys. So we're going after, you know, if we're going for somebody that we think might be able to partner with us, probably so cycling, probably so swimming or football or, you know, whatever. And that, you know, when we don't have the platform. So what we're trying to do is to work with other sports. We're talking to some other sports about joining forces and trying to think a bit more creatively. So rather than asking for a straightforward asset exchange in terms of income, we're looking for a partner, for example, as a training venue. So we're not a centralised programme. We decentralised some years ago, rightly or wrongly, and, you know, that's a whole new podcast about whether you want to centralise or decentralise these days. But we want to, you know, we want to find somebody to try and cut our cost of camps. So if we commit to having all of our camps in one venue for the next 4 years of the LA cycle, can we create an environment where, in return for that, we can have an agreement on the cost of that to reduce our costs? So that's the sort of the creativity we're having to bring, rather than looking for just somebody to pump money into the sport. I mean, if there are any philanthropists out there that want to pump money into the sport, I'll absolutely snap their hands up. But, you know, there's a reality, isn't there?
Justin, when you go and meet all the other CEOs and MDs of the national governing bodies, when UK Sport puts you all around the table, do they all go, oh no, are they all terrified of you? Justin's in. Or are you knocking on an open door there?
It's a weird world, if I'm honest. It's not.
That's what I wanted you to say, yeah. Actually.
It's not a diverse world. And there's a lot of people who've been in the sector doing this job for a long time that have got more skills than I have. I don't know. Well, it depends who you ask, I guess. There's some people that I think will be like, yeah, because they're on the same page. There's other people that are probably going, oh, shut up. But, you know, how is that different to any other world? I think the challenge is, as a newcomer to this sector and as somebody that's come from a commercial world, I'm used to having to find income. You know, I before I came in here, I was working in online retail, so we had to make sales. It was simple as that. We had to generate income. So that's my approach, whereas I think in some sectors, there might be people that's alien to them because they've always worked on exchequer funding, and the exchequer funding has always been pretty good. So long as you're meeting the requirements of your funders, you can do a decent job. Whereas I think that's not going to get better in the short term. Every exchequer funded organisation, whether that's sport, healthcare, I don't know, schools, everybody's in the same boat.
This is Great British Bosses from Anything But Footy.
Sergeant and Mr. Smith, you're going to love this house.
Bunk beds in a closet?
There's no field manual for finding the right home. But when you do, USAA Homeowners Insurance can help protect it the right way. Restrictions apply.
And we're talking to Justine Baines, the CEO of British Wheelchair Basketball. And Justine, you mentioned there about your previous roles, that you worked in retail and you've worked in charity, and your skills are kind of marketing and communication. So how different is being a CEO?
I suppose I started my work in advertising agencies, so the ability to multitask was there from day one. You'd be doing something and then a client would ring and you drop it, and then somebody would ask for something. So in that respect, I think I've had some good training. I think the biggest challenge is being objective and making decisions on based on evidence. And again, my sort of growing up in that world was really enabled me to be able to do that. There's a lot of people that are really, really passionate about the sport, and I love that. And I think a bit like the charity sector, you can't get that elsewhere. But that does mean that sometimes we have to make decisions based on evidence rather than what somebody thinks. And that can be quite challenging. I'm very, very lucky that I've got an exceptional board. I really enjoy working with my board. And the chair of my board is brilliant. We speak most weeks. I'm actually supported and given every bit of help that I could ask for. So I have conversations with my board about their skill set. So whether that's how to deal with something, or whether that's, you know, one of our board at the moment is helping us with logistics for Paris, things like that. I feel like I'm in a really lucky place, because I know that's not the same for everybody. I think it's just, there's a lot to juggle. There's a huge amount. I mean, I'm working at the moment just trying to finish up a code of sports governance and make sure we're compliant. And everybody in the sector moans about that. But it's just what we should be doing. We just have to record it. That's all. It's not that difficult. So it's more of an admin task for me than anything major. Yes, I've had to write a few new policies and document what we did anyway. But I think that we're in a place that is pretty positive from stuff like that. So it's just a lot on. There's a lot to think about. But I like that. I mean, who needs sleep anyway?
We are on the cusp of another Olympic and Paralympic year. This one has come around slightly quicker than most because of the shortened cycle. How excited are you for the organisation then for what might lie ahead in 2024?
I mean, excited probably doesn't even cover it. We had this year two major championships. We had our World Championships in Dubai in June, which were postponed from the 2022, thanks to the Football World Cup being in Qatar. And, you know, that's what happens to Paralympic sports. They get bumped because something else is more important, and that's not okay. But it's the world in which we live. And then 8 weeks later, we were in Rotterdam for our European Championships, which were our Paris qualifiers. And just to have the opportunity to sit courtside and see close up the power and the excitement and almost feel that energy that is coming off the court. I always say we shouldn't be a disability sport. We're a sport that you happen to play in a chair, as opposed to the running game, where it's the same sport that you use your feet to get around. It's so exciting. It's so skillful. I mean, it's not an easy sport to play. It might look easy, but I promise you, I'm disastrous at it and the butt of many jokes because I'm so bad. We have a platform every 4 years where our sport's on national television, and so we have to maximise that. So we're working with our clubs, we're recruiting ambassadors, we're doing some work, hopefully, with Channel 4 in terms of content. But it's a year that people will be more receptive to hearing about our sport. There's no doubt. I mean, Hannah Cockcroft's right. It dips off after each game. But we've got this window. And, you know, from the new year, you'll start to see, hopefully, a lot more proactive stuff from us, because we're just piling everything we've got into the sort of January to September window.
Funnily enough, you mentioned hockey earlier, and both men and women have yet to qualify for the Olympics. Both your men and women are qualified for the Paralympics after those great European Championships.
Yeah, I think our men, we expected our men to qualify, no problem whatsoever. And, you know, we won a silver medal at the Worlds, and that, I don't know if you saw that game, but it was the most exciting and heartbreaking game. Sport is brutal. You know, we lost that world medal in the last 3 seconds of the game. And that's sport. You know, you have to pick yourself up and go again. And the men were sublime. The women have just, you know, we're the only country that has a women's Premier League. So we can see the result of the investment into our women. But I can tell you the winning of the silver medal, so both teams are getting to the final qualified. that was as exciting for me as where we finished in that on that final. Just qualifying was just phenomenal, and the belief that that's given both teams to go on and medal in Paris next year.
Now, we know the Great British men have won 8 Paralympic medals, but they've yet to win a gold. How much of a game changer could that be to stand at the top of the podium?
I mean, I think they could do it. I genuinely think they can. And I think sport is one of those things that everything has to be in line on that day. But they definitely have the skills to do it. And I think that will just be a world changer for them. The challenge then is if we've got a number of men, we've got a good pipeline of men for coming into that squad, but we've got a number of men that we would hope to take to LA, some of the old, more senior players. I was about to say older, but they're all quite young. So, but the more senior players, winning a gold medal for some of them might make them want to retire. And I'm like, no, don't stay. So that, you know, but that's the life, I guess. You asked about the role of a CEO earlier. That is the line, because we've got our depth chart and we were looking at it last week going, we're in a really good place, but that could change if we do win that gold. Some of them might go, that's it, I'm happy, I'm going to walk away from that level of sport. So that, even with that excitement, you go, oh, don't want you to go.
Final couple of questions then from me. If you do win the gold, I guess the next challenge then is how you go about harnessing that, because that is a moment in time and it's wonderful for the organisation and the players involved. But how do you then bring that into the school halls, the playgrounds, the local leisure centres?
I think it just extends your platform a little bit longer. You know, being a gold medal winner at the Paralympics still has significance. And I think it gives you something to talk about and something positive and exciting to talk about. Being a Paralympian still does that. I was at something last week. My youngest daughter's had a post-GCSE awards evening, and there was an Olympic swimmer there from 2012. So he's still going around. He's still a young guy, but he's still going around talking about that. So it's still relevant to be an Olympian or a Paralympian. But I think that the platform is that bit higher if you're a medalist at that point. So we've got, and I guess that's where my background comes in, because we'll be nailing them on the circuit, going, go and talk here. The media are more interested. Social media content is more exciting because more people want to talk to you.
And just finally then from me, just how important in general terms is it that Paris, France is hosting the Paralympics? There's genuine excitement and interest in the host nation, because Rio was a struggle. I mean, it was a Games that very nearly didn't happen. Tokyo, for all the reasons that we know, was different. How important is it that Paris is good?
I think it is really important. We went from London where for us it was just phenomenal. I can still remember the hair standing up on my back of my neck on Super Saturday, you know, and it was cool. Rio, time difference is always a problem. You know, we're going to LA and then Brisbane after that. So it's going to be a challenge. I think getting to Paris will be easier. So you've got more people, I think, going from Great Britain and Northern Ireland over there. The challenge if you're a wheelchair user is that's really hard. Because if you try and go on Eurostar, everybody's being encouraged to use Eurostar and drive rather than flying, which is absolutely brilliant for sustainability. But you can only get 2 wheelchairs on your average Eurostar. So if you're a wheelchair user and you want to go with some friends and they're all wheelchair users, you can't all go on the same train. So the BPA, British Paralympic Association, are doing some brilliant work with them around trying to drive change. Because, you know, when we were told they wanted us to use it, we were like, well, it can take us 2 weeks to get all our athletes on. We've all got 2 chairs. And that's the world that we live in. So the BPA are doing some brilliant work, but there's a reality for people to go into the Paralympics that if you're not able-bodied, it's harder, and it shouldn't be. Just go to London on the tube and you can't, you go use certain stations. It's just difficult. And it's 2023, for goodness sake. This shouldn't be difficult anymore. So I think there's logistics of going is going to be a challenge. But I think to be able to go, for friends and family, for people that support the sport, to be able to watch it on TV in daytime hours, you can't underestimate the value of that, because it just makes life easier for all of us.
Well, Justine, I think before we started recording, we said we do these interviews to find out more about sports and the challenges that they face. You have literally opened our eyes to a huge issue that is coming up with these Paralympics in Paris. So we thank you for that. We will certainly be shouting about it, like yourselves. And Justine Baines, CEO of British Wheelchair Basketball, thank you so much for talking to Great British Bosses.
Thank you.
Sports Social Podcast Network.